Welcome to this week's podcast. I am photographer Sid Caesar.
And this is designer Dave Say.
And welcome on this crappy, rainy Thursday, June 23rd, 2011.
It is rainy.
First, like yesterday and today, like first rains in like weeks.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's been really, really nice. And now we got hit with like all kinds of crappy cold rain.
Yeah.
Which I don't mind. I like the cold, like cold. The coolness is nice.
It is nice.
But I don't like the rain so much as just rain.
Yeah, well, it takes away from your scooter time.
It does. Yeah. It does. I had a beautiful last Sunday. Usually in the early afternoons and evenings, I go to my parents once a week.
Yeah.
So I can do my laundry and stuff like that and hang out with them and everything. But it was so nice out last Sunday that I just kind of went over and I threw the laundry in the wash and I just took a nice, long, leisurely scooter ride, and I was like all over the place. I went through Bedford and Amherst, and I put 57 miles on it.
Nice.
Yeah, which isn't bad of just, you know, like aimlessly driving around little back roads.
Yep. And less than a gallon of gas.
Exactly. It's like less than, you know, it's like $1.25 worth of gas.
So how long does it take to do 55 miles?
It was a couple of hours. I kind of went out, and then I ended up... I don't know how I got there. I ended up in the field where we shot Ben Slavin the first time before he went on his trip.
Okay.
And I think that's in Amherst somewhere.
Huh.
Over by this silo and a soccer field and stuff. So I pulled over there and I was like trying to take, you know, like badass cell phone pictures of my scooter. Like, here's the scooter and here's the wide open road.
Yeah.
And I just kind of just drove around. It was awesome.
Hmm.
It's awesome. You got to fix your scooter so we can go on rides and stuff.
I'm getting around to it. Well, no, actually not.
Do it.
It's on my mind, but you know, it's in the basement, and I don't go into the basement anymore. I used to have my office down there.
Yeah.
And then I decided to move it upstairs to the living room because it was more light.
Mm-hmm.
It's made a big improvement. I actually like working in the home office now.
Yeah.
And plus, it's on the same floor as the kitchen, so I can have something going on there. And monitor it, whereas who knows, in the basement, just burning stuff all the time. Speaking of places where prior Sid Caesar photo shoots, last week I went and checked out Make It Labs, which is Nashua's first hackerspace.
Yes.
And if you're not familiar with a hackerspace, it's a place where a bunch of people who have interesting tools, like it could be metalworking stuff, woodworking stuff, lathes, computer equipment, laser cutters, computer controlled milling machines. Well, they have this new space that's right down by, it's on Crown Street in Nashua, which is by what looks like I think it's a railroad switching yard or storage yard or something like that.
This is almost on the Hudson line. Like,
okay.
It's where the bridge to, it's over by the Nashua skate park, the skateboarding park. Where,
oh, is that where
the bridge that takes you over to Hudson, like as if we were going to go over to Brian Thomas's place.
Okay. And so, they have this, I think it's 6,000 square feet. So it's like utility building with a garage. And they just installed a 9,000-pound car lift so you can go work in your cars. And I was talking to Kelly Muir, who was thinking about, wouldn't it be cool if like she had a car mechanics for girls?
For girls, yeah.
Of course. And so I got to talk to the community manager for the place, for Make It Labs. They used to be located in Lowell. But they only had 900 square feet there.
That's really small.
It's tiny.
Fairly small.
Yeah, and so they moved up here, and they're taking memberships, and it sounds like they're doing a lot of cool things. Their grand opening is on July 2nd, Saturday, so I'm playing and checking that out.
But yeah, we should go.
It's just really exciting that this kind of place to be creative with physical things.
Yep.
And with other people who want to learn and teach and share what they know. And totally awesome.
You can bring your scooter parts there.
I could. So I have this.
Give
what
you a
does
motivational
do?
Place to get so, your scooter put together.
Is it busted? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's exciting. So it's again, it was kind of fun. So I didn't know where this place was, and I said when I got there, I said this looks like that place that we were at that other shoot for. And it was kind of funny.
Yeah.
Now there's all these little places that I remember.
There's all these little things.
Oh, that's where Sid shot the picture of
the yoga shoot.
Yeah. Speaking of, like the last shoot you did was.
Yeah, so speaking of Kelly Muir.
Yes.
So she's got her son, Mannix, who's this cute little five-year-old, blonde-headed, curly-headed kid.
I think he's six now.
Is he six? Did he go through his birthday?
I don't remember.
And so I've been wanting to, like in my photography, I consider the music stuff kind of, it's a mix of personal work and commercial work. Like, I feel that I'm so ingrained in music that shooting the music stuff is, you know, it was the most... it was the thing I wanted to do the most as far as trying to find some kind of a niche.
Yeah.
And then I do the toy stuff as my personal work, but I also wanted to start doing more personal work that had real people in it and not toys. And so we went to PAX back in March, and Kelly and Ian with Mannix, their son Mannix, he had this little Link costume from The Legend of Zelda, the video games. Mm-hmm. And he was so adorable. And so like the minute I saw him, I was like oh my God, I know exactly how I want to start my personal work this year. And I wanted to do a Legend of the Zelda thing. So his costume at the time was kind of halfway done and everything. And so I told Kelly, I'm like, if you can get his costume done, you let me know when it's done and we'll do a shoot with him. Because I knew I wanted to do that, and I knew I wanted to. You had a fog machine, and I knew I wanted to start playing around with the fog machine, and then this test, like the Legend of Zelda shoot, was also going to double as a test shoot for another project that's a little more involved, with a lot more people that I want to do. But I wanted to have a visual example that I could show this yep. next project thing.
It all builds on each other.
It is. Everything stacks up. So I got an email from Kelly, and she was like, everything is done, and the sword is done, and the boomerang's all painted, and the potions are all in their glass cases. So we lined up a day, which was like a ridiculously hot day. And we had a fog machine, and I got a 5-horsepower generator, and I had it on a little cart on wheels so that we could move it around. And we did this shoot, and Kelly and Ian came, and Sarah came and helped out, and you came, and we had the fog machine set up. And it was quite a little tiny production that was going on. And I think it went out, and so we did a bunch of shooting. We shot for about an hour and a half or so. We learned how to use the fog machine. We noticed very quickly not to actually stand in front of the subject or very close to the subject, because then it looks like he's standing in a house on fire.
Yeah.
So I know that when we get to the next shoot now, we know to back away quite a ways and let the smoke sort of fill the environment behind it and not immediately behind him or right in front of him and stuff. Yeah. But that was kind of fun playing with it. And then we also discovered, according to Mannix, that the fog machine actually smells like maple syrup.
I said that too.
Did you say that?
Independently of
Mannix. He kept trying to eat it. He's like, he's trying to gobble up all the smoke.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense. And I was supposed to tip number 3 about the fog machine is, even though it doesn't look like much when you're looking at in natural light, when that flash goes off, it just
turns
white.
Was another thing too. Like,
that was awesome.
Yeah, it was interesting to see how much light that fog sucks
just
up.
Boom.
Yeah, like before we turned it on, I had just a really simple 3-light setup, and the images were looking really good. And then we turned the fog on, and I was shooting, and it just completely took that light away. It was amazing. So it looked good. So we did a bunch of shooting. We did I wanted that hero shot. I wanted a shot of him with his sword up in the air. And so we got that right away. And then we did a 1-light setup. And then by towards the end of the night, there was so much fog we shot in this forest area at Greeley Park in Azure. There's so much sort of fog floating around that we did a bunch of natural light images.
Yep.
And I just sort of had him, I told him to just sort of wander around in the woods like he was looking for something, like he's, looking for an enemy or something like that. And so we shot a bunch of natural light stuff with him way off in the distance, and the fog is just all in the woods.
Yeah.
And I thought it came out really well. I think, you know, and considering he was a 5-year-old that was kind of hard to, he after a couple of minutes, he'd be like, oh, what's over here? Let's do all this and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So he did really well. So I processed a bunch of images. I think I've got there's 3 really good shots in there.
Uh-huh.
And then I think I processed about 15. And I threw them up on my Flickr account, and I put them up on Facebook, and everybody seemed pretty happy with that.
Yep.
And then the next day, Kotaku, which is a video gaming website, it's part of the Gawker thing. Mm-hmm. They emailed and said somebody had sent them a link to the Flickr page, and they liked the images, and would they mind if they did a little blog post about it. So I was like, absolutely, throw it up. So they threw it up, and cool. I know it got them, I don't know, last time I looked, it was 170,000+ hits on that page that talked about it. So there was a little bit of website activity going on, people linking, cross-linking to the website and stuff like that. And then we just found out what a bunch of trolling nerds Kotaku is, because it was just all these trollish entries about a 5-year-old. And they were like, what's the matter with his eyes? And he doesn't look like Link. I looked more like Link, when I was that age. And it was nuts.
Yeah, you can't judge all of Kotaku based on
that. No, there was just a lot of stupid comments. And you just, I have to learn to ignore that, because that same thing happened when the whole Muppet thing went nuts.
Ignore it.
I got to learn to ignore those comments. I get on there and I'm just like, I'm going to reach through and grab that man by the throat for making fun of Mannix like that.
Yeah.
So it was good. So I got a little thing. So it got me juiced up for the next project, which I'm trying to line up right now, which is going to be comic based. It's going to be based on a comic. And then hopefully I can do some more of this stuff. I like this. I'm
cool.
One of the things I wanted to try to do was, it's not only am I involved in music, but I've got a pretty huge background in all this nerd stuff, toys and comic books and movies. And why am I not trying to bring more of my personal hobbies into my own work?
Yeah. The passion shows.
Yeah.
And yeah, again, you know, building the body of work will take you all kinds of mysterious places where you can never would have imagined.
Yeah. So it was good. It juiced me up. So I've got that, and then I've got hopefully a larger project if I can get that started. Now that I have this Zelda thing as a visual example of what I want to do.
Let me ask you a question. So let's say if you had the choice between being like someone like famous for taking pictures of celebrities, like, you know, I don't know, Annie Leibovitz or someone like that, versus taking pictures of, like, amazing pictures of pop cultural things and being in all the pop cultural magazines. You know, like, so, like, every time we need a picture of, like a comic book hero.
Mm-hmm.
And you sort of became known for doing that kind of work,
yep,
as opposed to, like, you know, like, you know, the mainstream stuff. Yep. Do you think you would have a preference for one or the other?
I think ideally if I could mix the two.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a lot of really successful celebrity portrait people do. You know, like, I'm thinking of, there's a guy named Dan Winters. He did a series with, what's the guy? He was in Stranger Than Fiction and Anchorman. Will Ferrell.
Hmm.
He did this really, really nice conceptualized series with Will Ferrell, and it was, they went out and they made all these props and they had him in a spacesuit and all kinds of really, really cool things. And I think that's the perfect mixture. Oh, okay. Where
this was for Wired magazine.
Yeah, it was for Wired. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he had like that big giant pill that they, you know, like they, and I think that, like, if I could do stuff like that, which would be, you know, like, I like working with the musicians and I really like doing this more personal work.
Yeah.
But it's sort of in the same realm, because even if you're dealing with musicians, if you can find the ones that want to do a little something on top of just sort of the normal stuff, you've got a little more free reign over editorial type of things.
Yep.
So
it's like the glimpse of a story.
If you could, squish them, like, I like the idea of like the Zelda shoot. Cause you know, if you can narrow it down to one image and you look at it, and it's like, it tells the whole story, you know, like there he is. He's in the forest and there's fog and he's on that log and he's got that, he's yelling and he's got his sword in the air. And you just, there's a lot of energy in that image.
Uh-huh.
And you know, the next shoot, I know there's going to be tons of energy going on with this thing. And the guy we've got coming in is just like, God, he's ripped. He is so ripped. He's like, roar. And so I like that idea. So like, ideally, like when I'm thinking Annie Leibovitz and when I'm thinking, you know, like Hugh Jackman in a Wolverine outfit, I'm seeing it sort of as the same thing. Like it's almost like I'm having a hard time distinguishing my music photography from getting a little more editorial stuff. And you can, I think you can mix those, because I think you're dealing with a group of creative artists.
Yep.
And so it's not like the local paper saying, why don't you go down and take a, you know, a portrait of the guy at the local sports store leaning over the counter and stuff.
Yeah, there's a particular image, I think, that the band people are looking for. It's not that we need a nice headshot that's well lit and we all look respectable and stuff like this, but, you know, the ones that
they need a hero shot.
And not just, you know, a specific kind of hero, but, you know, the kind of hero that they are.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of photo that reveals aspects of what's important to them, what they're about, you know, the scene they're part of, you know. Yep. So it is, you know, that's,
but I think it also crosses into the style that I shoot in.
Yeah. And you know, I'm saying that, like, they're very similar. Like, you're creating an image that's a snapshot of something that's larger. It's something that it's part of a bigger story. It's a moment within that story. That's the context that's happening. Mm-hmm. It's not just what you see is what you get. If you have your straight on headshot or your straight on, like, your group shot, this was a bunch of people standing in one place and the picture was taken.
Yeah.
And versus, like, you know, if they're all at war with each other, like having a food fight, you know, that's something something that's more interesting.
Yeah.
Or if it's a photo of like a bunch of people in a war, or, you know, doing something, in the act of doing something, in the act of making some sort of change. That's interesting.
And I think you can, with musicians and stuff, I think you can get away with that more. Like, I know there's a certain level that really you can go up to, and then anything over that becomes sort of like a big production kind of thing.
Yeah.
And most of the time they just need a really good quality, compelling shot or shots that they can use for marketing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I see it as both. Like, ideally, it would be nice to be able to incorporate both into that.
Yeah.
You know, but I would totally, like, you know, if, like, if, oh my God, like, if Wired called and said, you know, we've got this Avengers movie coming out and, you know, can you come out and we'll do a thing where you've got somebody dressed up like Captain America or something like that. That would be awesome.
Yep.
You know, and I think for me that would be good because I've got 34 years of comic book reading experience under my belt. So I think I'm in yep. embedded into that universe a little bit more.
Yep.
And I that's what I like. And that's why I want to start shooting stuff that I'm geeky about.
Yep.
Because I've got that history with it.
Yeah,
and
you know the pattern.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And you can present the pattern accurately and it also accessibly, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So that probably dances around that whole like either or kind of thing. But I like the idea of merging both of them. Like I really like shooting the musician stuff. And ideally that's what I really want to be doing for commercial stuff that I could try to make a living at doing because that's what I'm really passionate about.
Yeah. Yep.
But at the same time, you know, I want to be able to also produce personal work. And I think you just have to like the toy stuff was sort of the release for me from, you know, doing the other types of shooting.
Yeah.
And it's more of a personal thing. But now it's like, well, you know, now I've handled enough people and I've worked with enough people that now I want to be able to take sort of the ideas I had behind the toys and start doing that with real people.
Yep.
And getting it a little more into a production value.
Yeah. Yeah. Production values.
Production values.
Speaking of which, we saw Super 8.
Super 8.
And I think we liked it.
I think we liked it a lot. Yeah, it was really good.
you were still not on the J.J. Abrams rah-rah train.
I'm not. You know, like I saw, whatchamacallit, Star Trek, and I was like, meh.
Yeah.
And
that's not your thing, though.
But I did like, I forgot he did Mission Impossible 3.
I forgot about that.
And
I don't remember if I liked it.
It was good.
Was it?
Yeah, like I thought it was really good. I thought he did it really well.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought this was good because it was J.J. Abrams trying to emulate a Steven Spielberg movie from the 1980s, like when Spielberg was like his directorial peak.
Yeah. And you mean that in a good way?
In a good way. Yeah. No. It was the perfect mix of J.J. Abrams' more contemporary style with the sensibilities of a Spielberg movie.
And how would you describe J.J. Abrams' contemporary style?
He likes lens flare a lot.
He does really like likes the lens flare.
I was reading it somewhere. Somebody was like, you know, like only in a J.J. Abrams movie can you get lens flare at night in a field in a blackout. Like, there's crazy lens flare. But I like his camera work. I like his idea of he does things almost like with a handheld camera. Like he tries to get that gritty realism kind of Blair Witch, Cloverfield kind of handheld feel down. And this movie kind of had it, but at the same time, it also looked like it was shot on 80s film stock. Like the colors were just a little more, I don't even know what the word was. Like it was
like the color of the clothing.
Yeah, like it just it looked like the film looked different. Like you watch films now and everything has it's either digital or it just looks really clean.
Yeah.
And this like perfect example is like when I watched Raiders of the Lost Ark and then when I watched that new Indiana Jones movie, it looks completely different.
I think I had to rewatch
it's completely
that.
Different. Like the first shot, like, it was just and that was the big thing about the whole Indiana Jones thing. He was like, I wanna make it look like it was done in the '80s and I don't wanna rely on CG and I wanna do actual stunts and I wanna you know, and then you got to the opening shot and it's like, dude, like this is totally completely overlit and it's totally polished and it's like it's not even the same color scheme to it. But this worked. It was good. I was really surprised. And the thing that I love the most about it is that it's story driven.
Yes.
And it's not about the monster. It's like the monster is the MacGuffin in the whole thing. And it's about the relationship of these kids and the friendships that exist between these kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's about a story of a love story between these two little kids.
It was just, very sweet.
If I don't get to see it again in the theater, I'm definitely going to buy the Blu-ray. And it's definitely a collection, something to keep in the collection.
It's interesting the moments that he picks too to portray.
Yeah.
Did you see that TED video I posted up?
Yeah, the box.
Yeah. Did you watch the whole thing?
I did.
Yep.
I did. And he showed that scene from Jaws.
Yes.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
It's perfect. He showed this one scene from the first Jaws film that Spielberg did in 75.
Yeah. So he said, like, what do people think of when they think of Jaws?
Yeah.
And it's always, bah, bah, bah,
it's always the shark and the music and everything. And he had this very touching scene between Roy Scheider's character and his son. And it was great. And it was just like he was sitting at the table and he had his hands, clenched together. And the little kid was mimicking what he was doing. And every time he would move, the little kid would do it. And then finally he just leans over and he just tells his son, he's just like, give me a kiss. And the little kid's like, why? And he's like, because I need it.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really, it was good.
And so, and to J.J. Abrams,
that was what the movie was about. It was,
yes. Yeah. And that's, everyone else would miss it. And that's the kind of insight that I really enjoyed to see from him.
Yeah.
You know, so I've been watching his latest series on TV is Fringe.
Yeah.
So I've been enjoying that a lot. It's kind of a cross between X-Files and, well, it's very X-File-ish. But a lot of his series are, the characters themselves are compelling and the way they interact is compelling. Sometimes the plotting goes crazy. You know, like for example, in Alias, it kind of goes off the rails like in this third season. And then you start the WAP watching. And then,
yeah.
You know, there were issues with Lost, with people getting kind of lost.
Yeah. I think, like, I'm not a big TV series fan.
Yeah.
You know, like, most of the stuff that it seems that I like, you know, like Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah.
I thought that was perfect for what it was, and it only lasted 26 episodes, and you had a clear ending. And and I think I like, as far as TV series go, I like the stuff that sort of feels a little more like it's got an ending coming up. And there's, you know, like multiple seasons.
Yeah.
It's like,
I'm curious to see how Fringe goes, because I think it's plotted to actually have an ending.
Yeah.
Whereas like Alias did not. And I don't believe Lost did either. When the little things I've read about it, it's like, yeah, they got to a certain point and they kind of wrote themselves into a hole.
Right. They didn't know what to do.
And then, you know, at that point, it's like they talk about that Fonzie jump the shark moment when he actually it's like, you know, the writers have no idea where this is going.
No.
And it's time to stop literally watching. Time to lay this thing to bed.
Water skis.
Yeah. So what else is on our list?
Well, see, the good thing about seeing Super 8 was that it completely, like, even thinking back about watching Super 8 washed out the complete crap feeling I had in my mouth from seeing Green Lantern last week.
Didn't like
it. So, no, you know, like, we've been talking about, I know we've been talking, just, like, oh, God. So, I went and saw it Friday. It opened up Friday. We went Friday afternoon. We were on our way back from Concord. And I was like, we got to do it. I'm like, because if I don't see it now, the day it opens, I'm going to be like, oh, my God, blah, 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 just, like, bitching about it.
Yeah.
And so, we went, Sarah and I went in the afternoon, and we caught a matinee, and it was complete crap. And
was it?
It was bad. And, really? You know, it's like, but here's the problem with this. And this is where I get into my uber nerd thing. Yeah. Like, when you're that nerdy, geeky of a fan, I'm not allowed to have a say.
What do you mean you're not allowed to have a say?
Well, first of all, it's not a movie made for the fans. It's not a geek movie. It's a movie that has to be adapted into a summer blockbuster movie. So I'm far too involved. Like, I can't watch it trying to analyze it. I just I can't do it because it's like I'm too involved in the whole history of the character.
It's like they're mining the comic book trove.
Right. They need to figure out how to bring it. They need to figure out how to fill seats in the theaters and bring a bunch of people in of all ages. And it's not made for people like me that are going to sit there and be like, well, that's according to, you know, issue 5, panel 7. That's not exactly how it happened. You know, so it's like, so I tried to go in thinking a little bit more lighthearted about it, but it was so bad. It was just, first of all, it was horribly written.
Really?
It was just bad. Uh-huh. And I started going on this tirade on Facebook and I was like, I have to stop writing this stuff because everyone's like, I don't know. I didn't think it was that bad. And but the is crappy dialogue. It's totally crappy dialogue. We have 6 minutes?
Yeah, 6 minutes.
Holy crap. So it was really, really bad. We can get into it on another podcast if you want. But it was just, I was upset, but I didn't allow myself to get upset as I probably should have gotten because it's like, it's not for me. It's a mass market movie and it's not a movie that's going after the nerds.
Did it come out after we saw Super 8?
Yes. Or? We saw the week after. And so like when I came, like I was just like, oh, this was so bad. And then I came out and I looked at the movie poster for Super 8 and I was like, oh, but that was so good.
Yeah.
it was just atrocious.
That's cool. I should revisit some Spielberg movies from that era.
Yeah, we just watched Jaws the other night. We were talking about it and she won. And then we watched Duel too for the first time, which
Duel?
It was his first made for TV movie, but they like released it on DVD and stuff, and it was like the spiritual precursor to Jaws because it was about this guy and a giant what do you call it? Tractor trailer truck, and you never see his face, and he's chasing this guy on the road, and he's trying to kill him, and so it's like this like cat and mouse thing with this dude, and it's Dennis Weaver in this little car, and then it's this
back when Spielberg was in his 20s.
Yeah, they show him and he's all young and he's got no beard and he's like, I don't know what I was doing, you know, and like he had like 12 days or something to get this whole thing done. And
that's great.
It was crazy. So that was really cool. And then what else is going on? Oh, so the only thing I really have to say was last night, I got a ticket to go see sci-fi fantasy writer Neil Gaiman. Mm. He was at the Portsmouth Music Hall.
So that's how you pronounce his name.
Neil Gaiman, yes. And so he was doing, it's the 10th anniversary of his book American Gods, which came out in 2001.
I haven't read it.
It's good. I remember I bought it right after I got back. That was the summer I went to Ireland, and I got back and I read right through that thing. Mm. So it's 10th anniversary. So he was doing a thing with NPR, and they did this Writers on the American Stage thing. And so he came out and he did a little reading. He talked a little bit, and then he sat down and they interviewed him for about 40 minutes or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And it was cool. And then the person who gave me the ticket won that morning. She won backstage passes through NPR. So I actually got to go backstage after the thing, and I got to shake his hand, and I got to look him in the eye and get all nervous, and I totally got starstruck, and I was like fumbling. Yeah, I was like, I'm sorry, what did you say?
Yeah.
But it was good. And then the really good thing about that was the entire, at one point they were asking him questions, and they got on the topic of libraries.
Oh, so he talked.
And it was really good. And he went off, and he goes, you know, the interesting thing about, he goes, first of all, he's like, people don't understand what libraries are supposed to be. He goes, they are these places that you can go to and you can get information from. He goes, and librarians are like the keepers of the holy flame. He's like, you know, they're the people that they protect this room full of information. And he was talking about it. He was talking about librarians. And then he said, you know, last year he had been, he was last year's National Library Week spokesperson. And he said, at one point he goes, this guy comes up to me and he sticks a microphone in my face. And he says, well, now that we have Google, why do we need libraries?
But he
goes, he goes, it was a question I didn't have an answer prepared for. He goes, and I thought about it for a minute. And then I said, you know what? He goes, you can Google and you can get 1,000 answers. He goes, but a librarian will give you the right one.
Huh.
And then, of course, everybody claps and all that kind of stuff. So that was really good. So he talked about librarians a little bit, and then he wrote an episode of Doctor Who, which seemed to be the only reason why half the audience was there was to talk about Doctor Who. Yeah. You know, so it was good.
Is there some new Doctor Who that I'm missing out on?
Yeah, I guess so. Okay. He wrote an episode, and everybody was crazy about it.
Was this the same guy who some politician was taking pot shots at?
Yes, yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah, he wrote the Sandman comics in the 80s and the 90s, and so it was good. So we got to go backstage, and I got to shake his hand, and I asked him if it was just, it was completely, I was totally like tripping over my words. Nice. And I was like, blick, 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 blick. So that's cool. So I got to shake his hand. I thought that was really cool.
Yep. Anything, some last minute things?
I don't even know. I can't believe 30 minutes has gone by so quick. We didn't even get a chance about what you're doing.
Well, I'm not doing anything. I'm reading math books. We can talk about that next time. I'll probably have a better grasp on it. But, you know, we should mention that, well, I was just very impressed by that handbag that your girlfriend had, your fiance.
Oh, so, yeah. So, yeah. Becky O,
who I thought used to be Korean because of the last name.
Oh, really?
But that's not her last name.
Yeah, you were hoping she wasn't. You were like,
yeah. Oh. Yeah. Korean handbag maker. Yeah.
Becky O'Neill is her real name.
Yep.
But she goes by Becky O, and she, Sarah, we've been looking at her. She makes purses and handbags and all this beautiful, beautiful stuff. And Sarah was like, I want to treat myself to one. And so Becky came by last week and she dropped it off. And it was gorgeous. It's so gorgeous. And she's so happy. Like, she was just like, oh. And you were just talking about like how well made it was.
The craftsmanship was incredible.
Yeah.
It just made me want this thing. And I don't need a handbag, but this is a really good vibe from it.
Yeah.
You know, just the stitching, the proportions, the materials, the way it was put together.
Yeah.
Very clean. And plus, they had a little tag on the.
It had a little Becky O tag. Yeah. Sarah, so like, the night Sarah had it, she was like, I noticed that your cell phone isn't in the bedroom, because usually I bring my cell phone in the bedroom at night before we go to sleep.
Yep.
So she picks up her purse. She's like, I guess I'll just bring my phone into the bedroom. And she like walks in there with the purse. She's like, I'll just keep it in the bedroom from now on. I'm like, you like your purse. So I thought that was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
But cool. So I guess we ripped through 30 minutes. That's pretty crazy.
Yep.
All right. Well, I guess that'll do it for this Thursday, June 23rd. And I'm photographer Sid Caesar.
And designer Dave Say.
And we will catch you next week. The week after next week. 2 weeks from now. We'll see you later. Yeah. And a big props to Michael Bellar and the As Is Ensemble for providing our intro and outro music. And you can visit him at www.michaelbellar.com. Go visit him. Give him your love.
Woo!
Woo-hoo! Don't go see Green Lantern. It's go terrible. See Super 8 instead. Super 8. Thumbs up. All the way.